person who would be the most able to know about jury verdicts, not only from his defense experience, but bear in mind his court and the Court of Appeals, which he supervises, and the trial courts, which he supervises, handle every one of these cases. And he's most knowledgeable. He's probably one of the few men who would be knowledgeable of all of what's going on in our state. Senator Hill has left, but someone, and I will send him a copy of this, there is a publication put out every 2 weeks of every jury verdict in every county in the state of Oregon and in the state of Washington. It gives the amount of the verdict. It gives defense verdicts, plaintiff's verdicts, and settlements in court. It's been published for years. I'm very confident that that company would send him all the back issues, and there'd be no question. I think he will see that in the state of Oregon, the value and number of plaintiff's verdicts has consistently gone down. I will take it upon myself to send him a copy of that. One final thing, and I'll get clear off of this. Senator Cohen's question about what we can do brings this to my mind. Mr. Holmes' office with 13 lawyers and 30 support people is not overstaffed. We're charged to give good services, and it takes about at least two support people per lawyer to give top quality service. That adds to our overhead, which runs around 50% of our total income, which is about right nationwide. It's competitive. But what I don't think we are dealing with is this. In 1980, when I was president of the state bar, there was 4,400 lawyers. In 1987, there are 9,200. And the prediction is very clear. By the year 1990, there will be 12,000 in a state where the population has actually gone down by around 150,000. We, as members of the bar, cannot control admissions to the practice. I'm afraid that under the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling, you as legislators cannot control it. 75% of our members are under 5 years in experience. Now, professionalism works. I have no trouble with firms like John's. I hope he has no trouble with mine. If he does, he'll talk to me. I'll straighten it out. But in the interim, we can't control other than by education. And just one final thing. Oregon is the only state in the union that has lay members on every bar committee. Oregon is the only state that has mandatory insurance for all lawyers. We are coming through with mandatory CLE for all lawyers. We're actually doing things that I think will pay off sometime. But you have to realize the gates are open and we're inundated. And there's nothing we can do except work with those numbers. So much for that. Now, I wanted to talk briefly. The young lady who spoke first summed up what my experience has been, and that is that I was on the board of directors of Goodwill Industries for some length of time. The question continually came up as to where we could get insurance for our liability. Finally, it occurred to me to look at it because we don't have any liability. I have not been able to find a single case against the board of director of a nonprofit corporation anywhere. And why the premiums have gone up 1,000% and 2,000% is a total mystery to me, because I can't find anybody that's ever paid a dollar. And my recommendation was to forget the insurance because there's no risk. And I certainly wouldn't feel hesitant about being on any nonprofit board without insurance, because I can't conceive of how I could do any harm under our present tort system. It's a mystery. I would recommend that section be passed. I don't think it makes any change, because there's no liability now. And I can't see how there could be. If it makes them more comfortable to have Section 23 enacted, that's fine.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Burt?
All right. One other thing about that, however, it's pretty obvious that people are not making the distinction between profit-making corporations and nonprofit corporations. I believe, or at least till very recently, the Salem Hospital was a nonprofit corporation, and I don't think that they would qualify as a charity. So that is something that, and again, is education. One other good effect of this bill, I think it simply states what the facts are now, but many people who are not trained as lawyers would like to be on nonprofit charitable boards and hesitate to do so because they see some fear that they would be sued. Those are good people, and the boards need them. If this will ease that fear, fine, because we need those people doing this charitable work. And if they have a fear that they're exposing their own personal assets to something, it may be worthwhile just to remove that fear.
Well, as you know, the legislature deals all the time more in perception than in facts, so that's another perception we'll deal
with. I don't think that's improper. I think sometimes if you have something that's so generally construed to be a problem as this is, even though it's not a problem, maybe it's best to just lay it to rest. So I think it's perfectly appropriate that you consider this.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Burt? Thank you.
I was supposed to also, I'm the only batter today, talk about joint and several liabilities.
Well, let's see now. Let me take a look at where we are in this thing. I think we have now finished, at least for today, and nothing is ever finished in this committee on this subject. I can guarantee that.
These two people wanted to testify.
On what we're on now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we do have apparently a couple of witnesses on sections 21 to 23 who want to testify, and so I think I'll let them testify, Charlie.
I would perfectly agree with that. My proposal would be, sir, that maybe we could have another small session on this. There are some real critical questions on the percentages and so forth.
Yeah, right. I do.
And
wanna,
I can't handle it in this much time.
Well, that's true. I know it's an important part of this, and I want to try to get Mr. Hamlin to talk about that today, so he won't have to come back unless
perfect.
You.
Well, I'm perfectly agreeable.
Well, all right. Let's see.
We can take care of these two.
All right.
Yes,
okay. All right. I think that'll probably just about do it. Then I think what we'll.
Okay. This is just a letter. We don't.
Okay.
I'll put it in the record. I don't know.
Kip, on section 16 to 20, the for-profit corporation director's liability, we have a written letter, and did you want to add anything?
I've got Doug Reagan down here from Portland to provide a very brief testimony.
On that?
Yes.
You just 1 or 2 minutes.
You must be a lawyer. If you're not, why, I'll believe that you could do it in 1 or 2 minutes. If you are a lawyer, I'll consider it the same way I would judges consider all of our statements, that something's only going to take a minute or two. Well, I think we'll stick, right now we're going to stick with the same subject, and that is we're going to stick with I want to go down here to sections 82... Well, no, wait a minute. I want to stick with the same. I want to have Maury Astley and Dolores Morgan come up, and we're going to talk about the nonprofit director liability here and finish that up.
Thank you.
Come on up. Who's first here? Maury Astley, Oregon Independent Telephone Association. Anxious to find that out. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. My name is Maury Astley, and I'm the Executive Vice President of the Oregon Independent Telephone Association. We represent the 31 non-Bell telephone companies in the state. In addition to the two Bell local exchange companies, there are 7 companies that are corporate holding companies, which would be in the for-profit category. So I'm here really to support both the sections 16 through 20 as well as sections 21 to 23. In addition to that, we have 11 cooperatives, and the remaining 13 companies within the association are family-owned. Each of these has a board. Some are the nonprofit type, others are for-profit type corporations. I'm also the 1987 president of the Oregon Society of Association Executives, and it's an organization which is made up of executives from over 200 associations within the state of Oregon. As the executive vice...
Senator Wires.
Excuse me.
Could I ask the chair or council, is this language going to protect electric co-ops don't they have to show they're charitable like these other witnesses? Or are they going to have the protection that's in this bill?
That's a question that we haven't thought of. I'll have to take a look at the specific language.
Because just as a policy question, it would seem to me an electric co-op, even though I'm supportive of them, the directors there, that's a serious economic activity. It's not like a... So that's something we're going to define. Okay. Sorry I interrupt. I was hoping that we could save you your testimony. Go ahead.
I see. Well, even if they were for-profit, part of my membership is for-profit, and so I would be concerned about those sections as well. And as I mentioned in the testimony, the Society of Association Executives has not taken a formal position on this, but our board has recommended to our membership that at this next meeting we do take that position that we support the nonprofit section that you have in the bill, 21 to 23. I just want to give you a little bit about our experience, our concerns that were expressed to me as a staff person for this association recently when we decided we needed to get the officers and directors insurance. We had never been sued. We had no cases pending. But we found that we almost could not obtain insurance. And we went through the national associations, and we referred to companies in Chicago and other places, and they said basically because of a nationwide concern and some experiences they'd had, they weren't doing any insurance. They couldn't get underwriters anywhere. And we did get estimates, but not really availability. And the estimates ranged from 1,000 to 2,500. One of those that was at 2,500, we dealt with for over 9 months because they kept saying, well, maybe next month we'll have an underwriter. And we were never able to get insurance from them. The only supplier that we could find was one of our own associate members, which was an insurance company that provides property damage type insurance and fringe benefits, workers' comp insurance to the telephone companies and also to our association. And I think more or less as a favor to us, they gave us $1 million policy for $1,000 for 1 year, and this year they've told us that'll be $1,500. We're currently attempting to try again to see if there's insurance available. We're still dealing with some of the same people. Wohler still doesn't have an underwriter, still says it would be $2,500 or more, and it's just not available to us except through this one company. The board of the Oregon Society of Association Executives doesn't have insurance. They tried, and they had the same estimate of $2,500 to $3,000, and that association only has a budget of about $30,000. And so they've just chosen not to have insurance. They really just can't afford it. I won't go into the reasons why the boards are important for nonprofit or for-profit. I think you hear enough of all those arguments, and you're aware of those. But as Mr. Bledin said, I think this is an issue maybe that could be separated. It's probably less controversial in this whole complex matter that you're dealing with, and if some consideration could be seen to separate that or at least continue to realize that this is an important issue that should not be buried under all the other more emotional issues, we would appreciate that consideration.
All right. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Brenneman.
Do you have any experience in other states where there have been limits placed in these areas as to their experience now? Does it make any difference whether they can get insurance now to cover their officers and directors?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brenneman, I'm not aware that the other associations have seen a decrease in their insurance, but I really haven't discussed what they've done in the individual states. I could find that out, though.
I would be interested if you could.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Thanks.
I think I can answer Senator Wires.
All right. Council has a response to my help
I have a tentative answer to Senator Wire's question about what this covers when we talk about nonprofits. It defines a qualified director as a director of a corporation, a nonprofit corporation or unincorporated association whose primary purpose is religion, charity, benevolence, goods or services at no charge to the general public, education, scientific activity, and in general the things that fall under Section 501 of the Internal Revenue Code. I think providing goods or services at no charge to the general public would mean that his members of co-op boards would be covered by this. That's a tentative conclusion, but it looks like it.
Okay. Dolores Morgan.
Good afternoon. I'm Dolores Morgan, and I'm appearing today before you on behalf of the Oregon MED Providers Association. MED is mental and emotional disturbance. And my membership in that group is by virtue of my position as Executive Director of Delaunay Mental Health Center in Portland. Delaunay is a nonprofit, a corporation offering subsidized mental health and counseling services. We are funded by United Way, the City of Portland, the County of Multnomah, State of Oregon General Funds, and federal funds through Medicare. Like most members of the MED Providers Association, I report to a management board of volunteers who have been increasingly alarmed about their personal liability in this insurance crisis and what they see as an era of highly publicized, extremely high dollar settlements. This has resulted in increased difficulty in retention and recruitment of board members. I happen to have a number of attorneys who have been in the past on my board, and I must say they are probably the most alarmed of the lot, and since that's their field of expertise, it certainly causes great concern to the other members who do not share their expertise. I believe that Section 23 of Senate Bill 323 appears to alleviate these concerns. However, it assumes accessibility and affordability of appropriate insurance coverage. Based on information from the insurance industry, I have budgeted to triple the amount for directors and officers insurance for the coming year. Hopefully, it will be available. According to Kroon and Black, what had been a cost me $3,000 for a three-year policy will now cost me $3,000 for a one-year policy, assuming its availability. I believe that Section 23.1 should be clarified as to the intent, particularly in line 12 of the phrase, under an insurance policy issued to the entity. I'm not sure if the intent is to limit liability to the amount of the general liability coverage, thereby lessening or eliminating the need for directors and officers coverage. From reading it myself, I could not tell. I don't. For mental health providers, and getting back to what Senator Cohen mentioned earlier, there is another possible option for those of us who are increasingly being asked to treat higher risk clients due to the policy of contracting out services rather than having publicly delivered services. The $100,000 limit on tort liability enjoyed by the state could be given to providers of mental health services for those clients who are largely state-subsidized, those at highest risk of hospitalization. This would equitably share the risk of treating the most difficult population who in the past have been the sole responsibility of the state and remain the state's number one priority population for service. In summary, I would ask to have the insurance policy clarified by specifying general liability or directors and officers coverage, or for those nonprofits that provide mental health services to priority one population, extend the state $100,000 limit on tort liability. Thank you for this opportunity to express our concerns. I appreciate the job of identifying the serious problem to all nonprofits, and again, advocating for the $100,000 liability to be extended to those services that have previously been basically solely a state responsibility.
Senator Cohen.
I'm not sure that the $100,000 limit is where you want to go with this. I think we ought to look at bringing you in under the state umbrella of their own self-insured risk. And it would be an interesting exercise, Mr. Chairman, if we did that and we could see what kind of firm rates we could purchase from these people if we, in fact, for these people, if we put them under the $100,000 limit and see what kind of contract we could get. It might be something to put in front of the insurance companies as we move a little further along to see what they'd really guarantee us in the way of rates.
I would appreciate it. Make my job a lot easier.
I'm sure they wouldn't say that your premiums would go down that much, but we'll see what they say.
Just to be able to get it would be nice without
I'm
fighting
about general liability. I'm not talking about
I'm talking about the same.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Hamby.
The issue that Dolores speaks to is addressed in Senate Bill 361, which I noticed that your committee staff has pulled. And it's a problem that we on the civil commitment oversight committee recognize that none of the trial visits are working, et cetera, because of the assumed risk that the mental health community is facing with some of our more potentially dangerous mentally ill.
All right, thank you for that comment. Counsel, did you have a comment?
Yes, the question was whether the intent of Section 23 was to reduce or eliminate the need for directors and officers coverage. My understanding is that was the intent of the proposers of the legislation. It may not be felicitously worded, but as I talked to Catherine Weber, who was director of the interim task force, her information was that was their intent.
Okay, thank you.
I want to follow up with Senator Cohen's remark here. In the last session, all of us on this committee voted to change the... Everybody, I think all of us on this, everybody who's sitting on this committee now may recall that in the last session we had a bill that would immunize Good Samaritans and senior citizens. Remember that bill? It said, in effect, if you do all these wonderful things for your fellow human beings, why, we'll put a lid on your liability. And to this day, there sits up in Oak Ridge, Oregon, and I imagine it's perhaps typical of other communities in the state, a van that the senior citizens used up there for years. And in spite of the benevolence of the Oregon legislature in 1985, the van sits unused in Oak Ridge because they cannot afford to get insurance, even though we've practically made recovery impossible above ordinary policy limits. So I keep wondering, and all of us, I suppose, should ask ourselves this question. We have done things. We've established liability limits, and is it doing any good? That kind of fits in with what we're being asked to do here. Anyway, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator
Excuse
Brennan.
Me for interrupting, but I've right. got a couple of questions. It's your opinion, then, if this section were enacted, it's your feeling that you would be able to buy insurance then? It would be available to you, and if so, at a lower premium? Or
I've learned not to second-guess the insurance industry and to expect higher premiums. But that's based on recent experience. So I know my hope is that it would make it accessible. Now, with the information that the intent is to eliminate the need for directors and officers, then I think I would go back to my board and then talk with them and decide whether they felt that the law was sufficient to cover them, and then it would be a business decision. Certainly, some of the testimony involved today about the fact that people have been looking for a case in which directors and officers' claims have been made and have found none may make them decide that it's superfluous to have directors and officers' insurance.
Well, if it turns out, someday that some nonprofit corporation decided to go bare because the opinion of a lawyer that testified here was that there wasn't any there wasn't any liability anywhere, any exposure, why, I guess you all know who to sue for legal malpractice. His office is right down here in the Capitol Tower I'm building, I believe. Okay, Senator Brennan, do you have another question?
No.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, what I want to do is, unless it's going to be terribly inconvenient, Mr. Hamlin, I'd like to put over joint and several liability from today. We've got who all besides you, raise hands who wanted to be heard on that part of the bill. Maybe you're the only one. This is on Sections 14 and 15, Joint and Several Liability. I have Charles Burt and Mr. Hamlin and anybody else. Anybody else was here to testify on that? Well, since you somewhat were agreeable coming back, I think I'll ask that be done, because what I want to do is I want to take Sections 82 and 83 on indemnity sole negligence, because it's going to be short. And that way I've got one Portland attorney, Doug Reagan, who at least can get out of here today, and Jack Kalinowski. The only two witnesses, I think, are here on those sections. Is that right? Anybody else here to testify on Sections 82 or 83 on indemnities?
16 through 20.
16, no, that's right.
Profit.
That's what I thought.
No, this is the for-profit. But I assume that's brief.
All right.
Anybody, I haven't had any conflict with.
I mean, all right, Mr. Reagan is here on, come on up. You're here on two matters then, are you? I've got you down here for indemnity negligence.
No, I'm here solely on Section 16 through 20.
All right, fine.
I am Doug Reagan. I am with the Miller Nash Law Firm in Portland, Oregon. I'm here on behalf of Willamette.
Which firm, sir?
Miller Nash.
Okay.
I'm here on behalf of...
Same firm Mr. Richter's with, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm here on behalf of Willamette Industries, Inc., because Mr. Richter told me yesterday afternoon that you were having this hearing, and my client has authorized me to come down here. If you are not familiar with Willamette Industries, Inc., it is an Oregon corporation. It has extensive wood products operations in Oregon and throughout the United States. It's a major landholder in this state, and many of its shareholders are based here. Willamette favors the amendments to the Oregon Corporation Code, which deal with the ability of the Corporation Code to indemnify directors for expenses and liability, specifically those provisions which appear on page 7 in section 18, which permit the Articles of Incorporation to set forth provisions eliminating and limiting the personal liability of a director to the corporation or its stockholders for monetary damages for breach of a fiduciary duty as a director. That provision is not really an insurance provision. It's a provision dealing with corporate governance. It's a provision which is parallel to, though not exactly the same, as provisions adopted in the state of Delaware. The reason that we favor it is because it permits the corporation, by shareholder vote, to indemnify directors, and thereby increases the ability of corporations to attract well-qualified people to serve on private corporate boards. The alternative, Mr. Chairman and committee members, to this is an alternative that, quite frankly, Willamette Industries has entertained, and that is to change the domicile of this large Oregon corporation to Delaware. Other corporations represented by our firm have made that decision. Now, you can decide for yourself whether you'd like to have corporations incorporated in Oregon or have them go off to Delaware. That's a separate subject. We can deal with it. We have put off dealing with that subject until you address this, because Mr. Richter and other members of my firm were aware that bills would be presented to you. Now, we say that we do support this. We support with more enthusiasm an alternative, and that would be that my understanding is that your committee will soon be presented with a major comprehensive amendment sponsored by the Oregon State Bar on the Model Corporation Code. Similar provisions drafted with a little more consistency with the balance of the Corporation Code are in that act. I can't provide you with or with in that bill. I don't know the bill's number, but I'm told that you're going to be having hearings on it in a couple of weeks.
Well, I don't know about the 2 weeks, but this committee will have a hearing on that bill at some point in time.
But we do encourage you to address this subject. And on this particular count, we really are talking about corporate governance. We're talking about things like green mail, unfriendly takeovers, and all of those policy issues as opposed to insurance issues. So you can see why that really does need to be integrated and carefully thought out within the Corporation Code. But we don't want you to miss the opportunity to deal with it, because we do think it's timely and it does need to be addressed. And if the price is that it comes in here rather than in a total reform of the Corporation Code, our preference would be to get the job done as quickly as possible. One last comment. The provision here refers in the proposed amended section 50.